Good morning and welcome to the morning show on WRCO-FM. I'm Joanne Krulotz filling in for Phil Nee today, and we have Steve Board in the studio. Welcome, Steve.
Thanks. It's a pleasure being here. I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me.
Well, it's always fun to catch up on what's going on at the Richland School District, although it's kind of quiet this week with the students on spring break. But I saw on Facebook the band is having a good time.
Yeah. This is a week where a lot of our administrators, they're still working. Our district office is open, but it is an opportunity to kind of catch up because we don't have the general chaos with all of the other staff and students in our building. So a great time for our staff and students to kind of recharge for the fourth quarter, which will start next Monday. But we do still have some things going on with our spring sports. Have started here in March, and then our band has made a safe trip down to Florida, and they're enjoying some good weather down there, and they'll spend the vast majority of this week down there before returning this weekend. So it's an exciting time, it's a fun time, and we know that it's spring sports because it's now started to snow again, so we've had to deal with some weather delays already.
Yeah, you can always plan winter's going to arrive when spring sports start.
Isn't that the truth?
One good note, though, you didn't have any snow days really that you have to make up for this year, did you?
It really has been a pretty mild winter, from a calling off of school. We had a few delays and maybe a cancellation in January. We had kind of back-to-back weeks there where we had two heavy snowstorms, I believe, on like a Tuesday and a Friday that impacted school. And then the next week we had that really bitter cold stretch, and that impacted schools a little bit. But we had plenty of days built into our calendar, so I believe we had up to six at the various grade levels, and we've just barely tapped into those. So barring some really crazy weather here in the spring, whether it be really late snowstorms that impact things or flooding is usually the spring concern, barring that, I don't anticipate there being any hours of instruction impacts where we're going to have to make up days, and we should be able to have a pretty smooth spring with students getting good education. And anytime, we can have education without a lot of interruption and learning, that's a benefit to our students and our staff. They get in a rhythm, they get in a flow. It helps with discipline issues, but it also helps with just general academics, having that day-to-day routine. And we've really been able to do that pretty well this year. And knock on wood, hopefully we can get through another couple of months without any severe weather issues and have a great school year.
That day-to-day routine is really important for students, isn't it?
It really is, and again, it's not just academically, but just for their well-being. Studies show students need to be in school, they need to interact with their peers, and oftentimes some of our biggest struggles are Mondays, and the old adage is nobody likes a Monday, but there's some truth to the fact that people get out of routine over the weekend. And so when we have days during the week that we don't have school, that impacts it. It's almost like a little mini weekend, and we've got to recalibrate, especially our youngest learners. But students that come from, split families, things like that, it just messes up their routine, and that impacts their overall well-being and their ability to do well in school. So whenever we can have consistency, both at home and in the school, I think that's just very beneficial to our adolescents.
Well, this week is, quiet with no students in the buildings. It's also a busy time for administration, and especially with the school board election coming up, isn't it? It's Friday's an important day.
Yes, yeah, we've got, it's a big day for the school district next Tuesday, April 2nd at the election. There are several school-specific questions that will be asked, and school board members are up for election or re-election, and that's certainly an integral part to what happens during our school year, as we have the school board elected officials working closely with administration to really relay the thoughts of the community, and the priorities of the community is what the school board's job is. They bring that vision and set those outcomes for our school district each year. and then work with administration, starting with myself and then our administrative team. And the administration then implements those out, you know, figures out ways to implement and reach those outcomes. And so it's a really vital part of the process for us to have community involvement represented by the school board, working with administration to carry out that plan with our staff to be able to have student outcome, which reflects the vision of the community. It just kind of comes back full circle. And so this this Tuesday, we have three school board member seats that are up for election. We have our city seat, which is currently held by Scott Bailing. Scott is being run unopposed at this point. There's no write-in, but I'll talk about the write-in process here a little bit. So Scott's the incumbent, and he's currently running unopposed. The at-large bid that is open is currently held by Brady Doudna. Mr. Doudna is also an incumbent. He's been a longtime member of the school board. He is rerunning, and he is currently running unopposed. And then the third seat, which is really where our electors at this point will have to weigh in, is there's an Area 1 East seat. And what the Area 1 East seat covers is the eastern part of the Richland School District and extends to the north as well, and actually just a little bit to the west of Highway 80. And I can certainly get anybody the exact townships if they're interested in running for this. That Area 1 East, it's outside of the city, but in the Richland School District boundaries. And that had been held by Melissa Wirtz in December. Melissa Wirtz decided to not seek re-election, and that no one had filed for candidacy papers at that time. Since then, we have had one write-in candidate. Lee Van Landite is running as a write-in, official write-in candidate. And so right now he's the only one that will be on the ballot, but folks will have to write his name in if they choose him. Now, you mentioned earlier that Friday is a big day, and so with any of these three seats, Friday at noon is the deadline for someone to declare a write-in candidacy. Okay, if they wanted to be eligible for a write-in on Tuesday's election, they will have to declare candidacy no later than noon on Friday. And they can do that at the district office. And that would be true for any of the three seats, not just the one that is being run, that is open right now where there's one write-in. You could do that with the city, the at-large, or the Area 1 East. Friday at noon is the deadline. Friday is Good Friday, and so technically our district office is closed and there will be nobody around, but I will make sure that I am in the district office from 8 until noon, and if for some reason I would have to step out of the office for anything, for any length of time, I will put a note on the door where someone can reach me on my cell phone, and I will make sure that I communicate with them so that we can meet that deadline and they can meet that deadline with the state. That's a state-imposed deadline, Friday at noon. That's not a local deadline. So we'll make sure that I'm around and we can make that work, but they would need to come to the district office. Obviously, if someone's considering it, I would encourage them to come up to the district office before Friday, get any questions that they might have answered, and if they do choose to run, we can get them the paperwork, and then they can get the paperwork filled out and get it back by Friday at noon.
What does that paperwork consist of?
It's generally pretty simple, Joanne. It's declaring your residency. You've got to fill out. There's a brief financial form, not necessarily as it relates to personal finances, but just ensuring that you're not going to spend an exorbitant amount of money on a campaign. There are limitations with the finance laws, but again, it's pretty straightforward paperwork. There's no petition or any signatures that you have to get. You simply have to declare candidacy, fill out a couple forms. It generally takes people about 5 minutes. Many of them over the years that have done it right in the district office when they've picked up the paperwork. We've got a notary right there as well. So at least through Thursday, we would have one that we can get it. Otherwise, you can go to a local bank and get it notarized. But that's really probably the biggest challenge, is getting it notarized.
Do you need to bring an ID or anything with you?
An ID, and then we would look up, especially with the rural area, to make sure that their property, their homestead that they reside at, actually is in the Richland School District, because as we know, that there are the school boundaries don't necessarily follow any general rules in terms of landscape or county boundaries. And so we do have to ensure that the person running is housed within the Richland School District. That is their primary residence, and that's where they reside, and it is in our district. But otherwise, some ID, we usually have to look up some, you know, if their ID doesn't happen to reflect their homestead, they may need to bring in a utility bill or something to prove that they live at the area that they live. But again, it's generally a pretty painless process.
Well, I know if you don't have kids in school that, you know, if you're on the borderline of districts, it can be confusing. I mean, I sit home and I watch Kickapoo and Richland school buses both go by my house.
You know? Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And we have several people that own property in two different school districts, and they might pay taxes towards two different school districts. But the key point for running would be whether or not your residence, your primary home, your homestead, and not necessarily the adjoining property, but your homestead, which district that is in. And that's defined on your property tax bill. And whatever that states, that's the district that you're officially in as it relates to running for an elected position within the school district.
Well, Tuesday isn't just a big day for school board. It's a big day for the district with two referendum questions. And I know you had your last talk-in tour yesterday. How did those talk-in tours go?
Yeah, generally speaking, the talk-in tours went very well. Of course, you know, I would love to be in front of, you know, 100-plus people, because anytime we get an opportunity to be in front of people, we get a chance to inform people of actual and factual information. You know, going all the way back to the community forum that was held at the Phoenix Center in early February, where there were two of those, and that was kind of a joint effort between the city and the county, and they talked about, you know, Simons and the campus, but the school district also had a voice there, and they were gracious to give me an opportunity to present information at that point. That was really where we got in front of the most people. I think we were, you know, between the two sessions at the Phoenix Center, I think we were close to 200 people. It's been on YouTube. I think there's over 600 views now of those presentations. So we know that that was helpful in getting out factual information. But in addition, the school district held four different talk-in tours specific to the school district referendum, not relating to the city or the county or the campus or Simons or those kind of things. We held one at the primary school in early March, one at the intermediate school, I believe the second week in March, and then two yesterday at Richland Center High School, one at 10 a.m., one at 5 p.m. Just try to come up with different days and different times to accommodate folks' schedule, people who might work second shift or are just unable to do it at a 5 or a 6 o'clock meeting. I would love to say that we had, you know, just an enormous amount of people that attended. It wasn't as well attended as I would like. I believe at the primary school, the very first one that we had, there was just like two outside people that came in. The one at the intermediate school was more attended. I believe we were up to 20, 22 at that one. And then I think we had 8 or 10 at each of the two sessions yesterday. So we certainly got in front of people, and I appreciate everyone who took time out of their day to come up to one of those, any of those sessions, and really become informed. I think that that's the most important part, right? It doesn't necessarily matter how anyone votes. That's up for them personally to decide, right? I have my personal opinion, but my professional opinion as a school district is my job is to give factual information. It's your job as a voter to receive factual information and make an informed decision on that. In today's world, we do spend a lot of time or resort to a lot of social media and rumors and hearsay to get information. And while some of it can be very accurate, there's a lot of misinformation on various, you know, places that they seek. And so when we're asking voters to you know, vote for or consider a referendum question, or in this case, two referendum questions, I think the biggest thing is it's just important for our voters to be informed so that they understand what they're voting for, what happens if it passes, what happens if it doesn't pass, what's the impact that it's going to have in their pocketbook as it relates to their property taxes. And then once they understand all of that, then make an informed decision. And again, however anybody votes is their choice. That's the great thing about our democracy. But I do want people to be informed, and having these talking tours and getting a chance to be in front of some people certainly helped us get that information out.
Why don't we take this opportunity to kind of review what those questions are and what would be the impact to a property owner?
Yeah, I appreciate that. And every resident in our district should have recently received a flyer in the mail that the district sent out, a very factual two-page newsletter that was sent out specific to the referendum so that they really got a chance to see what the ballot questions were, how does that impact them, and hopefully they got that information. But just kind of a general recap, the school district is asking voters to consider two different questions. Both questions are fairly lengthy in words, so I'll try to summarize them, but also try to represent it accurately so everyone is properly prepared when they go to the ballot booth. Question one, or the first question that will be listed of the two on the referendum, we're referring to it as question one. Question one is going to state, shall the school district be authorized to increase the revenue limit? And then there's going to be several numbers and years within that question, starting with 2.3 million in the 24-25 school year, and then increasing to 2.4 the following year, 2.5 the next year, and then finishing with 2.6 in the 26-27 school year, or excuse me, the 27-28 school year. So this is a four-year referendum that we're asking voters to consider. At the end of 4 years, it expires, okay? So this is not something that voters will be on the hook for long term, and it will be used, that money, that excess of $2 million will be used, one, to cover the deficit that the school district has, the increasing expenses that incur, that all folks in our community have seen throughout the state and the nation as inflation has increased. We have exceeding transportation costs, insurance costs, utility costs, general expense costs. Textbooks cost more now than they did 6 years ago. Wage increases, those kinds of things. All of our general, if everything remained exactly the same, things just cost more now than they did 4 or 5 years ago. And everybody has seen that in their own lives as well. So we were able to stretch things out a little bit with the influx of ESSER dollars through the pandemic. Okay, the state gave school districts some money, and we were able to do some strategic financial decisions to stretch that out and extend us to a viable option through next school year or through this school year. But moving into next school year, if we want to maintain our current staffing ratios and some of the teachers that we've hired, we are going to be showing about a $750,000 deficit. Okay, so somewhere between $700,000 and $800,000 is our current projected deficit for next year if all things are status quo. By having this referendum, we would, one, be able to maintain our status quo, okay? And then folks might be wondering, well, you're asking for 2.3, but you're telling me that, you know, you're going to be just shy of $1 million deficit. What happens to the other $1.5 million? What we want to do with the other 1.4, 1.5 million, and again, these are all general numbers at this point because none of our things are set in stone, but we are falling behind in wages across the board for our staff. Our hourly employees are getting, it's more attractive and they're getting more financial rewards in working in the private sector. Even some of our fast food places are paying just as much, if not more, than some of our wages to our hourly employees. So everybody from our IT department to our food service to our custodial maintenance, our support staff, our secretaries, our administrative assistants, those classroom aides, all of those folks that are hourly employees are underpaid. And we need to make sure that we get them up to competitive wages so that we can keep valuable pieces of our school community as part of our school community. And then the other part of it is our teachers and the rest of our staff, okay? And our teaching staff, I've said this at all of the talking tours, it is not uncommon for us to lose veteran teachers, experienced teachers, good quality teachers to neighboring school districts because they simply can make $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, $8,000, $10,000 more than they can make at the Richland School District. We simply haven't been able to keep up with wage increases with our surrounding school districts. And as a result, that directly impacts our students because we're losing good quality teachers and replacing them sometimes with a really quality teacher, okay? But oftentimes in today's world of teacher shortages, we're really struggling to fill some of those teaching positions with quality staff. And I'm very fortunate we have a wonderful staff, but we want to keep our staff. We want to retain them. It's not just about attracting them. It's also retaining them. So taking that $1.4, $1.5 million of extra money and applying it directly towards our staff and our wages and making sure that our hourly wages and our salaries for our teachers are competitive and are really making us the district of envy, which I've used that term numerous times, but it's not the only component, but it certainly is a component. We have to make sure that we're paying people competitive wages. And so question one centers around those kinds of things, filling the budget deficit, increasing wages for our teachers and our support staff and our employees across the district, as well as just providing some enrichment opportunities, getting students to have more opportunities outside of the classroom walls and outside of Richland Center, whether it be a field trip. And I'm not talking a picnic to Devil's Lake, all right? I'm talking true academic enrichment opportunities. We have some wonderful parent-teacher organizations, PATTs, PTOs, booster clubs, foundations. All of those have been very generous in helping to donate and pay for busing, okay? But the school district does need to do its part to provide these enrichment opportunities as well. And so this would give us a little bit of a cushion to be able to put directly into some enrichment opportunities. So all of that is centered around question one. You know, will the school district be able to exceed the revenue limit by $2.3 million next year and then increasing by $100,000 each year after that? It won't tell this in the ballot, but it's important for folks to know that that question will come with zero tax rate increase. Okay, so the school district has kept its tax rate at $9.12 each of the last several years. That is projected to be exactly $9.12 if this passes or if it fails. Okay, so there's no tax rate increase for question one. Question two centers around getting our property and our buildings safe, secure, fixed with school finance the way it is. Many school districts across the state, and I believe over the last 4 years, upwards of two-thirds or three-quarters of the school districts have had to go to referendum. So this is not a phenomenon unique to the Richland School District. But because the way the school finance works, many school districts are facing declining enrollment. Declining enrollment means declining revenue. And when we have declining revenue and we're forced to do more with less, okay, with increases in wages and utilities and transportation and all of those things, it creates a very problematic situation where it's often the easiest thing to do as a Band-Aid is to say, well, let's not fix that roof this year. Let's wait until next year. Let's not fix that parking lot this year. Let's wait till next year. Next year becomes the following year. The following year becomes the year after that. And this domino is created. It's known as deferred maintenance. You are deferring the maintenance you need to do and putting it off down the road. We do this sometimes in our own home. So we say this air conditioner or this heater might last another year. I hope I can make it last another year, even though it needs to be replaced now. And then you plan for it, right? And you save money and you do that. The school district, if they wanted to save the money to do that, it would come at the direct expense of having educational opportunities. We would have to reduce the staff that we have in order to save money. So again, this phenomenon is not unique to us, but what happens is school districts simply defer maintenance, and then they have to go to referendum to try to encompass a big package where they can get the things that need to be fixed. And so we did not rely on our local experts, although I think that we have some wonderful maintenance and custodial people that are very, very knowledgeable. We did hire or work with a company called Nexus Solutions to come and do a comprehensive facility assessment of all of our buildings and of all of our areas and really come up with what are the priorities that the school district has to address. And so they came up with several priorities. If we were to do everything that's included in their assessment report, it would be pushing upwards of $80 million, okay? We know that our stakeholders can't afford an $80 million bill, right? And so we really had to pick out what are the things that we need to do now that will get us through the next decade, 12, 15 years out, right? And We've still got areas of our Richland Center High School roof that need to be fixed, okay? We're fortunate that we've got good roofs on our primary school and our intermediate school. We've been able to tackle a good portion of the high school, but that is a huge building, and it's still got the original roof on it. The quote-unquote new high school that was built in 1996 is now 28 years old. That 20-year roof is 28 years old, and again, we've been able to extend it, and we've been able to patch and try to minimize any water infiltration. But it's seen its life, and we're to the point now where we have to get some of these things fixed. So when you encompass the roofing, we have ADA accessibility issues. Our bathrooms are outdated. It's very difficult for somebody who's limited in mobility or in a wheelchair bound to get to some of the areas, whether it be in a restroom or to watch their child or grandson or daughter do the pole vault in a track meet or the long jump or watch a JV baseball game. There is no handicap accessible options for them to get down and watch their loved ones. And so we've got to provide more accessibility. We've got to provide better ADA compliance in our facilities. We have technical education upgrades that need to happen at our high school. Much of that is in our tech ed shops, our either original equipment with the building, or in many cases came over from the old high school. Some of the equipment that they had up there is pushing 40 years old, and it's just not conducive to teaching kids to be career ready outside of the Richland Center High School, and they go into the workforce because it's not the same equipment that shops in the area or welders in the area are using. We need air conditioning at the primary school and the intermediate school. Those buildings become very, very hot in August, September, May, June, and any kind of summer school. We have folks that work year round, and we know we can get hot, muggy days. Yes, we can get cold snow in March, okay, but we also know we can get those hot, humid days in April and May, and this is not conducive to a good learning environment. We have all of the deferred maintenance that we talked about, not just our roof, but our parking lots. The traffic patterns at the primary school and the intermediate school are problematic. Anybody who has dropped a child off or picked a kid up before or after school know that they're weaving in and out of traffic and weaving in and out of buses. We've got staff that are having to stop buses or traffic to let the other one through. We need some auditorium upgrades. Our auditorium is a beautiful facility at the Richland Center High School. It gets used by not only a lot of our students and performances, but also the community, whether it be the local dance companies or community players theater, these kinds of folks. Oftentimes they're bringing in their own lighting and sound because the equipment that we have in there is outdated. It's 1996 equipment. There's been many advancements made to lighting and LED and sound. Some of the stage is original plywood. It's starting to become problematic, and we don't want to have an unsafe situation. In addition to just general safety and IT upgrades and things like that. So that's what question two revolves around. It is a $27.1 million bond, a loan that the district would take out and pay that back over 20 years. Interest rates, while they have crept up over the last few years, bond rates are still favorable from a historic perspective. So we feel this is a good time to do it. Not only do we need to have our buildings fixed, but financially it seems like a good time to do it. If this question doesn't pass, we're going to still have all of those problems, all of those issues that I just spoke about. They're not going to go away. And the projections are that this $27 million project this year, if we push it off even 1 year, is projected to be upwards of $32, $33 million. And so this problem isn't going to go away, and it's just going to cost more down the road. Okay. Those are factual statements. All right. If question one doesn't pass, we're going to be forced to eliminate some teachers, about 5.5 positions to be exact, in order to balance our budget. And we're still going to be facing a situation where they're not paid at a competitive wage compared to the local area and our local school district. So those are the two questions. Again, question one comes at a zero tax impact. Okay, there's no tax increase in terms of a tax rate increase for question one. Yes or no, it doesn't change it. Question two, the capital referendum, the $27 million referendum, if that passes, that will fall on the property tax owners, and it will increase their property taxes. For an average home in the Richland School District or an average property in the Richland School District is $161,000. That would come to an actual out-of-pocket expense of $14.76 per month. So just under $15 a month is what it would actually cost the average property owner. Obviously, if you own a little bit more property, that would be a little more. If you own a little less, it would be a little less. Our mill rate, I mentioned our mill rate or our tax rate earlier, has been held steady at $9.12. That would increase to $10.22. So a $1.10 increase per $1,000 of property value. So someone out there can do simple math, just a little over a dollar per $1,000 of property value, and that will be the increase on what you would see on the school district's portion of this. But again, in the end, if it passes, we'll get to start working on it. We'll get bids out. Probably not a lot of construction or things that can happen this next summer, but we'll be working on the process, and then much of the renovation would be going on in the summer of 2025 and probably even spill over into 2026 a little bit. But if we push this off, it is going to cost us more, and we would have to come back to a referendum in April, likely April of 2025, and ask for the same type of thing. And it probably would cost more at that point, just so the stakeholders are fully aware of what that would look like.
Well, I appreciate, you know, all that you had. That's a lot to take in, you know. Yeah, I'm glad I only own a small house, because when you talk about roofs and you talk about HVAC and you talk about plumbing and electrical, it adds up quickly.
It does. You know, we have the district has tried to be very responsible in terms of the footprints and the number of buildings that it has to maintain, because it is very costly, right, to maintain buildings. It's costly to maintain our own houses. And so over the years, we have sold Rockbridge. We have sold Lincoln. We're in the process of selling Jefferson. That closing date is April 30th. So by the end of this month, that should be off the district's books. Yes, we did purchase the partner school, East Hall, but it's a much smaller print footprint than Jefferson was. Not only would it have cost us upwards of $700,000 or $800,000 to modify Jefferson to make it work for the charter school or the partner school, but it still would have been a much bigger space, a bigger space than what's needed. And so the utilities and the maintenance on a school like East Hall or partner school is going to be much different than it will on Jefferson. So we feel like we're right-sized right now. Our primary school, formerly known as Doudna, our intermediate school, formerly known as the middle school, and then our high school, which now houses our grades 7 through 12, that's the right size for a district and the number of students that we have. And we do actually have a little bit of room to grow, in addition to having, you know, a 4,000 square foot building, which is a relatively small building, educationally speaking, in East Hall to house another, you know, a couple dozen students down there in an alternative fashion. I really believe that we have been very fiscally responsible in the footprints that we have, so that we don't have to maintain 4, 5, 6 buildings and have everybody spread out. It's nice and comfy, right, when you're able to spread out and you've just got all this space to do whatever you want in, but is it really the fiscally responsible thing to do? And I think getting rid of those buildings has been the right choice.
Well, we'll take a break and we'll be back with Richland School District Administrator Steve Board in just a moment. Back to the morning show. I'm Joanne Krulatz in for Phil Nee, and we are here today talking to Steve Board, District Administrator of the Richland School District. How are you, Steve?
Doing great.
Well, you know, last night after your talk and tour, you also had a school board meeting. And I know we've been talking a lot about money today, but I think I took it as good news when business official John Bosworth was talking about the debt of the district, because he kind of shared, you know, some of the school districts around having zero debt. Lancaster, Stanley Boyd, and Tomahawk were at zero debt, and then it ranged all the way up to, with the most, Platteville had $40 million. Now, I do understand that was schools within your conference and schools right around the same enrollment, But out of the 25 schools, you were placed sixth with only a $10 million debt. Now, that is good news for residents of the school district, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah. So when we look at the prior board meeting, one of our board members, Mr. Bosworth, had given an update on just our overall debt summary, right? Where are we at with our loans? What do we have to pay off yet? Those kinds of things. So I would encourage people, if they're really interested, to start with that board meeting and maybe view that. And then last night, as a result of one of the follow-up questions, was how does our debt compare to similarly sized school districts? Okay. And so we have a comparative group that we typically will use, which is 11 schools directly above us. School districts, 11 school districts directly above us in enrollment across the state, and 11 schools directly below us across the state. And so when we take those 22 schools in addition to us, we usually get, you know, 23 schools that we're comparing them to. And that's kind of our comparative data group. All right. And so when we're talking about, well, why are we comparing ourselves to Tomahawk or Stanley Boyd or some of those places? It's because they're a school district very similarly sized as the Richland School District as it results to the state. And because I said earlier, revenue is driven directly by school enrollment, these would be schools that would have similar revenue limits to the Richland School District, which is why it's important to kind of compare that. It's not necessarily apples to apples to compare it a school district of almost 1,300 students to a school district of 500 students, right? They're going to have completely different balance sheets, et cetera. Within that comparative group, as Mr. Bosworth pointed out last night, there are a few school districts that, as of the end of the 21-22 school year, so the data we get from DPI is often lagging a little bit, so you know, this would have been a couple years ago, and it's possible that some of those schools have already gone back to referendum, okay, or gone to referendum and now have some debt. But based on June 30th, 2022, there were three or four schools that you just mentioned that didn't have any debt, right? They've been able to pay it off, and they no longer have debt. But the vast majority of school districts in that comparative group did have debt. And of the ones that had debt, I believe we were second in with $10 million worth of debt. And that was at the end of 21-22. Since then, and folks may have heard me use the word defeasance, the school district has used a financial strategy called defeasance over the last couple years to stabilize the tax rate at $9.12, and then use that money to prepay some of our debt, okay? Our 2016 referendum debt was not scheduled to have a penny of principal paid until 2026, so 10 years of interest-only payments just out the door that we were, you know, not making any progress on our loan. By using defeasance, it's allowing us to make some extra principal payments on that. And by the end of this year, we will have that debt down to around $5 million in total, which is a very minimal amount across the state. And as you mentioned, there are some school districts within our conference that have $40 million of debt, and there are other school districts in the conference or in Southwest Wisconsin that are going to referendum right now, you know, or next week in April for multi-million dollar projects and capital improvement that will add to their debt. So, you know, as it speaks right now, the district, again, has been very fiscally responsible in their capital improvement projects. The 2016 capital improvement project was a little bit of a Band-Aid in terms of that was an $8 million, just over $8 million to get us by, upgrade some safety and security, get some roofing done at that point. This is a little bit more comprehensive capital improvement project, but relatively speaking, as it relates to debt, the district is very low considering the similarly sized school districts across the state of Wisconsin.
Some of the other things that you were bringing up was the school report cards.
Yeah, some great news to report. You know, so most folks understand that the state, the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction, or DPI, puts out a school report card each year. If they've been around our high school or they've seen anything that our high school staff have put out, they have been really excited about the growth that they've shown on the 2022-23 report card. And so The school district report card for every school district is a range from 0 to 100, okay? Anything over a 70 is exceeds expectations. That 50 to 70 mark is in there, excuse me, I believe it's 55 to 70 is meets expectations. So that's where they want school districts to be. And then they also break that down, not only from a district standpoint, but from a building standpoint. So our primary school, which is a pre-K through grade 2 building, they do not actually get a report card. So if anyone were to look up the primary school or the partner school, they would not get a report card because in the case of the partner school, there's not enough students, okay, because one or two students can really influx data, right, when you've only got a dozen students there at this particular moment in time. The primary school, they don't, that building doesn't have an age or a grade where they get a state assessment. Those don't start until third and fourth grade. And so because the primary school only houses grade two, their report card will say no rating, no grade, no report card. And they will continue that. We will never have, under our current grade configuration, we will never have a report card for the primary school. So I want that disclaimer out there. With that, when you look at Richland Center High School, okay, they went from a 55.2, which was meets expectations. They had a 9.6 point jump. That's the largest jump in school history, okay, all the way up to a 64.8. We're still in the meets expectation range for Richland Center High School, but that is significant improvement, almost a 10% increase in our school report card from 21-22 to 22-23. Our Richland Center primary, or excuse me, intermediate school, which is grades 3 through 6, they had a 64.9% point in 21-22. They increased a full 9 points as well, up to 73.9, and they are actually in the exceeds expectations now at this point. Now, 23-24 report cards won't come out until next year, so again, we're always lagging behind a little bit. But having those two buildings, one jumping up 9 points and the other jumping up 9.6, was great information to see and showing that we're really moving the district forward, both in terms of climate and culture, but also academically. District-wide, they also put together a district report card, and we jumped from 59.4 to 67.7, so that was an 8.3-point jump. So all three of those, just incredibly great news for our school district, and credit to our teachers and our support staff and all of the folks that promote learning within our school, because we really had a stellar year in terms of growth and movement at the Richland School District. And it does show that when everybody gets aligned towards the same vision, that you can make significant progress in a short amount of time.
Do you think the transition to the three building campus kind of helped with that?
I don't know. That's a great question. I don't know that if it helped, if it provided better opportunities or what that looks like. I think that anecdotally, it certainly would be reasonable to think that whenever we have all of one grade in the same building, in the same location, for those teachers to be able to collaborate, for those students to be able to interact with, instead of having a Doudna and a Jefferson, where we're splitting up our second grade, third grade, fourth grade, whatever it might be, I think that there's certainly, you know, merit to the idea that some growth happens just because our teachers are more aligned and everybody's getting the same education. But I also think that there's been a conscious commitment over the last, you know, couple of years to really move our curriculum forward. We have a curriculum pilot program going on at our high school right now, led by a group of teachers. It's going really, really well, and I think that they're just going to piggyback off of this growth that we see in our report card and really take that to another level as we get our academics aligned with standards and make sure that we're guaranteeing a viable curriculum option for all of our students in the Richland School District.
Well, good mental health has to do with that too, doesn't it? And I know that's part of your priorities and goals, that you've even been getting input from the students and staff.
Yes. In fact, one of our top goals and priorities was making sure that we address the mental health needs of students and making sure that students had a good adult, an adult that they had a good positive relationship with. And so in the fall, and I've talked about this before, but we sent a survey, students filled out, we didn't send it to them, we had them fill out on every staff member, every adult, not not just their teachers that they interact with, but every teacher in their building, every custodian, every food service worker, every IT, everybody that's in district office was on all of the surveys. And we had students tell us, do you have a positive relationship with this adult? Do you know who they are? Do you know who they are, but you really don't want to talk to them? Do you know who they are and you feel very comfortable talking to them, right? And so we were able to take that data, and I believe we had about a 4 or 5% of our students did not have a positive adult connection when we did this in the fall. Now, some of that's reasonable to expect. We have new staff members that just haven't had the opportunity to develop connections. We have new students that don't know anybody. And so when we're taking this data, you know, the first or second week of school, it is reasonable to understand that some of them didn't necessarily have a connection with an adult. But I'm happy to report when we did our second survey in January, that 100% of our students, every single student in the Richland School District, reported that they had a positive connection with at least one adult. And many of them had positive connections with many adults. But this has been a conscious effort. And it goes both ways, right? Our students are aware, they get a voice, they get to know, they get to say who they have a connection with, but then our staff are very acutely aware of making connections and understanding the value in making connections with our students. And it's, again, it's not just our teachers, but it's all of our staff. It's our janitors being able to, you know, greet people with a smile and a good morning. It's our food service, our IT, our support staff. Everybody across the board is responsible for educating our children, and seeing that kind of data is just great to see. We do still have a couple of students that reported that they didn't have a good friend. We're working with those students. We've identified them, and we're going to try to get them some good connections without making it an awkward situation. But knowing that 100% of our students have a positive connection with an adult was our number one priority, and at this point, we've been able to do that.
And did that have to be an adult staff member or someone in the district, or just it could be someone at home or a grandparent, or how did that work?
Yeah, this was specific to the school district. So this was, we wanted to make sure, because again, research shows that when students attend school, they have better mental health, they have better social skills, and they have better academics, okay? Why don't they attend school? They typically don't attend school and face truancy issues, which leads them down a problematic road, when they don't feel like they have anybody to talk to, like they don't feel like they have a connection either with a peer or with an adult. And so we really wanted this data to show, do they feel comfortable with somebody in the school system? If something happens, do they feel comfortable talking to them? Do they have that adult connection with somebody in the school district? If they do, then they're more apt to attend school, they're more apt to enjoy school, and when they enjoy school and they're attending school, they're more apt to have better mental health, their social emotional well-being is better taken care of, they have better interactions with their peers, and they do better academically.
Now, coming up, you have two important dates coming up, this Friday and then again next Tuesday.
Yes. So again, this Friday is the deadline for anybody who wants to be considered a write-in candidate for next Tuesday's election. That will be Friday at noon at the district office. Again, I plan on being there. It's Good Friday, but I plan on being there until noon. I would encourage anybody who's interested for any of the seats. Again, it's Area 1 East, which is an out of the district to the east part. There's a city seat that is being currently run by Scott Baling, and then there's an at-large seat currently being run by Mr. Brady Doudna. Lee Van Landite is a write-in candidate for Area 1 East. It's important for our voters to also know that they don't just vote for a school board member that is in their area. They will vote for every school board member. So even if you are in the city, you will vote for the Area 1 East and vice versa. If anybody's interested in that write-in candidacy or learning more about it, come up to the district office this week, but paperwork must be done by Friday at noon. And then that election, I would encourage everybody, regardless of how they feel, get out, exercise your right to vote, be an informed voter, and then go to your municipality voting election site and cast your ballot, not just for the school board, but for the referendums and any local races that we have or statewide races. Part of the great thing about being an American is that we exercise that right to vote. We have that right to vote, and I would encourage everybody to be informed voters and actually vote.
Now, with the write-in candidates, if you're not sure of someone's spelling, does, you know, if you spell it wrong, does it not count? Or
yeah, that's a great question. So two things will happen. One of the things that will happen after noon on Friday, once we have any writing candidates, that's their deadline to apply, we will be sending a notice of all the writing candidates. And again, at this point, it's just Lee Van Landite that is a write-in for Area 1 East. But any writing candidates that we have, we will send those to each of the clerks of each of the townships, municipalities, and the city. They will have that available at the ballot booth so that folks know who the write-in candidates are. However, to answer your question about misspelling, the law states that you know, a good faith effort is made, and if it's reasonable to interpret who the name is, then we would count that as a ballot item. So they don't necessarily have to spell that name exactly correct, as long as we can identify that is, you know, John Smith as opposed to Susie, you know, Van Mullen. Okay, so as long as we can kind of identify who it is, we will count that as a ballot. It's the intent that matters.
All right, so just get out and vote on April 2nd. Thank you so much, Steve, for coming in today.
Thanks, Joanne.
See you next month.
Thank you. Appreciate it.